You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Gary Oldman is an actor many moviegoers love to hate because he's played some of the most memorable and over-the-top villains of the past 25 years. But in his latest film, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, Mr. Oldman is most definitely the hero in the midst of a nest of vipers playing the restrained George Smiley. Tinker, Tailor is part of the Carla spy saga created by John le Carré, and in it, Mr. Oldman's character is brought out of retirement to search for a mole who may have been placed at the very top of the Circus, a spy agency that closely resembles England's MI6. It has earned him an Oscar nomination for Best Actor, and I'm very pleased it has brought Gary Oldman to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
So is it a bum rap? Haven't you played a number of good guys over the years? Beethoven?
Yes.
Sirius Black?
Yes.
Commissioner Gordon?
Yes.
But I suspect that casting directors tend to think of you for the nasty roles.
Well, there was a bit of a rut that I got into in the 90s. I played two very extraordinary sort of over-the-top characters for Luc Besson. One was in The Professional, or Leon as we called it in Europe, and there was also The Fifth Element. Those were the scripts that came in, those were the calls that came in, and actors sometimes go through those sort of periods in their career where they're really at the mercy of the imagination of people that are casting you.
But you could also take it as a compliment that those are difficult roles and they thought you could handle them.
It is a compliment. I'm flattered. It was just after the ninth villain came in, you know, you get a little tired of it.
But isn't this part of the problem with character actors? Wally Shawn once told me that when he gets a script, he's reading through it, and then it says, "Enter, no gnome-like man with green pallor." And he's like, "Oh, my part."
Yeah, and you read, it's the same sort of thing with, a character enters, and he has a sort of kinetic energy, fierce, burning, crazy eyes. Yeah, and you think, "Oh, yeah, that's me."
In his review of the film for Morning Edition, Ken Turan said that you're not the most obvious choice to play George Smiley. Were you interested in it because it was so different from other things that you've done?
You know, I was obviously aware of the material before it came along. If you were to Google George Smiley, it's as if the man lived. I mean, it's such an iconic literary figure. It's like Sherlock Holmes.
But everybody sees Alec Guinness when they hear the name.
If you stopped someone in the street in the UK of a certain generation, over a certain age, and you said, "Who is George Smiley?" I bet they would say, "Well, it's Alec Guinness."
In this country too, because it was a big hit on American television.
Because it was, that series in 79. So I knew the material. Obviously, but it fell from the sky. It really did. I was out of work, or resting, as I suppose actors like to call it. I'm resting between engagements. I was out
with
of
your
work.
Cell phone, by your side,
and in my kitchen, and the phone rang, and my manager said, "Would you like to play George Smiley?" And it just came in out of the clear blue sky.
Well, now you've been nominated for a Best Actor Oscar, and many people are surprised to note that it's your first nomination. Have you felt slighted in the past? Because you've done some pretty impressive work.
Yeah. No, it doesn't surprise me, really. There's a certain amount of work that is involved. You've got to be one of those people, I think, that have to sort of push yourself. I don't have a publicist. I never bothered, never had one. And I like to, obviously I promote films and I do go out there and I do press and all of that. But when I'm done with that, I like to just go back into my hidey hole. I'm not part of that sort of, I don't network in that same way. I'm not surprised that it hasn't happened before, but the momentum of Tinker Tailor is such that at one point you get off the train or just take it all the way and see where it ends. And I got the nomination.
Also, it's an oddity in another way. You've played so many over-the-top characters, and here you don't speak until 18 minutes into the film.
Yes.
He is a lot more reticent than someone like Stansfield in Leon or yeah. Drexel in True Romance yeah. or even Ludwig von Beethoven. When you don't have much dialogue, are you limited to acting with just facial expressions and the way you hold your body?
Yeah, it's very much a physical thing. It's also, well, it really is. It's all in the eyes. It's the inner life. It's the internal life that is going on that you hope is somehow is working or communicating. We have an advantage here because we have this fabulous book to start with. And even though our story is, we're telling the story in 2 hours, and the great deal of the book has been condensed. I've read the book. I've read the books in the trilogy, and that's the subtext. All the clues really to playing Smiley are all there in that book.
Did John le Carré come to the set?
He came twice. He's in it actually. If you a very
flitty, I know I saw his name on the
yeah,
credits. Yeah,
you blink and you miss him.
He's at a party.
He's at a party. He's at one of the sort of Christmas parties at MI6, and it was in fact it was an idea that Thomas Alfredson, the director, had. Le Carré was there, basically. He was there always as a resource if you needed him at the end of the phone. And you could call him and ask him, what colour is the paper on the top of a top-secret document? Or you could ask him a character question, and he knew the answers because he had been there and had worked there.
Is that something you might ask him? Why would Smiley be doing this at this point?
I felt that was, in a way, answered for me in the book. But what was great about having, an author that is living and is, well, as 80, he's 80 going on 25. I mean, he's a wonderful old boy, John le Carré. He was there. He could answer questions. I wanted to really know a little about what would it have been like for Smiley in the field when he was recruiting and when he was an agent. So there were those kind of questions, the sort of backstory questions.
And you like to develop a backstory for characters that you play?
Not always, but I think the writing demanded it. The material really demanded that it be thorough.
Because Smiley is a rather mysterious character. He's not telling you very much about himself. So if you know why he's holding back at a certain point, that helps you in developing the character.
Yeah, and it just means that you have an intention and a directive, in any given scene.
My guest is Gary Oldman, who stars in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. He has been nominated for an Academy Award. The film is still showing in some theaters around town. It wasn't all that long ago when British actors, even Laurence Olivier, couldn't pull off a credible American accent, and American actors did awful British accents, and that all seems to have changed over the past 25 years. You have any idea why? We're at a situation now where Meryl Streep can play Margaret Thatcher, and nobody says, boy, she got that line wrong?
Well, she's miraculous in that film.
But why you play American accents and nobody yeah. and people think you're an American?
Well, the thing is I like to think I was a little responsible for it 25 years ago.
Before Renee Zellweger.
Oh, yeah, because I sort of feel that I, in a way, made it more. I felt that it should be more. My career should be more international and not so pigeonholed and colloquial. And feel that I really did push the boat out a little for people like Dan Day-Lewis and Tim Roth. I was one of the first people that came here and played Americans. But it's you were telling us a story about
before we went on the air, I told you, Charlize Theron.
Charlize Theron.
Who's from South Africa and only speaks with an American accent now because this is where her work is.
Yeah, I lived in America for 20 years. My kids are American, and it is the sound that I hear all the time around me. And I went to a voice coach, a Jewish New Yorker, to brush up my English for Smiley.
Really? To your British accent?
But yes, because there's certain sounds and things that one makes, and you don't always recognize them. You don't always hear them.
Well, in Britain you do, because I remember when I lived in London, people talked about how accents changed just from one town to the other, 12 miles apart, and actors had to be very aware of that, just as they had to be very aware of how a certain sound would reveal class.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, George.
So English actors have always been doing accents because they are always playing parts that aren't similar to their own experience.
Yeah, I mean, people also don't think, you know, that you. I mean, if you take an actor, let's take an actor like Sean Penn, who was born on the West Coast and grew up in the West Coast. If he is playing a New York detective, let's say, or a Boston detective, then he will need a voice coach, because he'll be doing a different accent to his own. But when you live, I mean, I give you a very crude example. You would say aluminum, and we would say in Britain aluminium. Now, I might think I'm saying aluminium with a British accent, even though I'm using the correct pronunciation. But there may be that sound of American in there.
Mm-hmm.
So you think you're doing it accurately, and that's where I think over the years you lose your native accent.
You mentioned the director Thomas Alfredson. This is his first English language film. He's probably best known for the Swedish vampire movie, Let the Right One In. And like the vampire movie, Tinker Tailor is a bit creepy. Was that something he discussed with you?
No, I think it's...
His style?
It's his vision. And it's his... there are certain directors that even, you know, despite themselves, they have... There's a frequency, a tone... to their movies.
The story is predicated on Cold War paranoia, like suspicions about a communist mole, and that really happened in the 1950s in Britain with Philby and Guy Burgess and others. But this story is set in the 1970s. Do you find anything from it that's applicable to the present day, or is this strictly a period piece?
Well, I would argue that much has not changed. I think we live in a world now where the enemy changes, faces, locations, but there's still espionage. There's still these long periods of stability with the occasional promise of annihilation. Rockets going off, being launched off the coast of California, and a dictator saying, I deny the Holocaust and I want to destroy America. I mean, it feels much the same for me living in Europe as I did through that time, where you were occasionally reminded. You were just occasionally reminded of it.
Tom Hardy, who's also in Tinker Tailor, plays an agent who's suspected of betraying the spy organization and defecting to join Russia. He was also in he's in the next Batman film with you?
He is in, he's in The Dark Knight Rises.
You have any scenes together?
We have a very, very brief scene together. And I was also in a film coming out later this year, which is The Wettest County, which he stars in. And Batman, of course, Tinker Tailor, so it's been the year of... Last year was the year of Gary Oldman and Tom Hardy. We're getting married.
People are talking.
So, yes.
How many of these films are already in the can? Is the Batman film pretty much finished?
It's done. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just a matter of when they decide to release it?
I think it must be the summer.
Well, congratulations on this film. Maybe people will see a whole new Gary Oldman, which I suspect you would appreciate. You'll start getting romantic lead parts. What do you think?
Well, I don't know about romantic leads, but I welcome the change, that's for sure.
And good luck with the Oscars.
Yeah, 26th.